Good morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sunup. The Daily Sunup podcast is a conversation with the Colorado Sun. See our trust indicators at coloradosun.com/ethics. It's Thursday, June 20th. Today, our temperature reporters Michael Booth and John Ingold talk health and environment issues, including, quote, how we died in 2023. Whether teens are using marijuana more or less, and some exciting renewable energy news for the Western Slope. Before we begin, we'd like to thank our sponsor, Pinnacle Assurance, Colorado's leading provider of workers' compensation insurance. Pinnacle provides caring protection that Colorado businesses can rely on as they expand across the country. From finance to robotics and Arizona to Orlando, Pinnacle's nationwide coverage goes wherever Colorado businesses grow. Now, let's go back in time with some Colorado history. For over seven decades, the federal government gave away too much western land, leading to economic and environmental issues. To counter this, on this day in 1960, the USDA transferred nearly 4 million Great Plains acres to the U.S. Forest Service, creating national grasslands. High crop prices, irrigation, and the Homestead Act spurred settlement in the early 20th century eastern Colorado, but profits declined by the 1920s, leading to the Dust Bowl. President Roosevelt's 1935 Resettlement Administration helped farmers relocate, restoring over 11 million acres. By 1960, a third of this land became 20 national grasslands. Today, Colorado's Pawnee and Comanche national grasslands offer recreational activities and help preserve vital parts of Colorado history. Before we continue, the Colorado Sun is partnering with multiple news outlets across the state to understand what is driving Coloradans this election year. What issues do you care about most as we head into the 2024 election? Let us know by filling out our survey at coloradosun.com/votervoices. Next, our feature story.
Thanks for joining us, folks, for the Thursday podcast from the Colorado Sun. Thursday is the day we talk about climate and health news together. From our temperature newsletter, which comes out every Wednesday. And if you're not already a subscriber, we hope that you'll consider joining that as a subscription along with all of other premium membership newsletters. And we have with us today, as always, John Ingold, our great health reporter. He's got a couple of big topics to talk about this week. Before we get to that, just wanted to mention a great event we have next week. We always try to provide free events for our members and for anybody else who's interested next week. We have Tatiana Flowers, our great social services and equity reporter, hosting an event about mental illness in Colorado and how we can improve care, improve recognition, improve the ways that we treat it in relation to all the other big problems we have in Colorado that are closely tied to mental illness, including affordable housing, addiction, all those issues tied up together. She's got a great panel of experts that she's going to be talking with next week. So go to coloradosun.com/events for the June 25th event at 6 p.m. and sign up, and you'll get notices and figure out how to join the live chat that night. We hope you'll join that. John, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, Mike. How are you?
Not quite as busy as you have been. You had a really stellar list of things in the temperature newsletter this week on a wide variety of topics, as always. We could start by talking about the most arresting headline of the temperature week, which was how we died, which is kind of a mind bender since we're still around to consider that question. But how did other people die in Colorado this past year? You put together those numbers, and what stood out to you about how things look compared to other years?
Yeah, we definitely had a lot of data coming our way in the last couple of weeks. So the state has finally finished its vital statistics data for 2023. This takes a long time because they have to first source population data so they can calculate rates. They also have a lot of extraneous, just little bits and additions here and there that come in. Death data in particular can be hard because they collect data on Coloradans who die elsewhere. So that takes some time to get here to the state. But the big takeaway is that Colorado saw close to 45,000 deaths last year. That is, in terms of rate, that's a little bit more in line with what we saw during the pre-pandemic years. We've seen some higher than normal death rates the last few years, especially in 2021. which was, of course, a really bad year for COVID, plus some of the secondary consequences of COVID, people not seeking out medical care and getting some issues taken care of when they should have. And that resulted in some higher number of deaths as well. So we're seeing a little bit of a return to form here. The top two causes of death in Colorado last year were what the top two causes usually are. One would be cancer. That was number one last year. And one would be heart disease. Cancer was the top, like I said, but it replaced heart disease, which had been the top for the last couple of years. But cancer in recent years has often been on top. So they kind of go back and forth a little bit. Coming in number three was accidents, which is kind of a catch-all category that encompasses everything from falls to car crashes to drug overdose deaths.
And if we'd been looking at this last year or the year before, would COVID cases have been on this list, on this top 10?
Yeah, that was one of the notable things this year, is that COVID fell out of the top 10 for causes of death. It had been as high as number three back in 2021. And last year, there were 626 COVID deaths, which is still really extraordinary when you think that this was a virus and therefore a cause of death that wasn't with us 4 or 5 years ago. It was 600 plus deaths this year. It was the 12th leading cause of death in Colorado. So that kind of shows the way that the pandemic is waning in severity. But when you compare it to other infectious diseases, flu and influenza and pneumonia, they combined to kill 371 people last year. So again, COVID in terms of infectious disease is well above what we're seeing with flu and other kind of respiratory diseases.
And it's a good reminder to people, why do you talk about COVID so much? You know, come on, it's waning in influence, as the word you use. But on the other hand, when you look at flu, which we talk about a lot every year and is always a warning to the elderly and to the young and other vulnerable people who have immune issues, we spent a lot of time talking about flu, and COVID is still almost twice as much as flu. So a reminder of why we're talking about it frequently.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I don't know if this is setting in as the steady state that we're going to see with COVID annually seeing this many deaths, or if we're still going to see some declines over time. Certainly, COVID is more dangerous for folks who are older, especially folks who are in that 80 plus year category. So, you know, it's not something that maybe if you are a bit younger, like you and I are, Mike, you know, it might not be something that's on your mind as much, but certainly it's still here and it's still killing a lot of folks. And that still makes it really important. And so when COVID season comes around again, which will probably be kicking up in 2-3 months here in Colorado, it's always kind of important to remember not just what your own personal risk is, but what you may be spreading that could end up getting someplace that actually does cause harm.
Other things that stand out on the list as both a journalist and just a citizen of Colorado, again, reminders of why we hear about it a lot and a prompt to continue to talk about it because a significant issue are things like suicide being unfortunately high up on the list in Colorado, results of diabetes, which is obviously a serious chronic illness for a number of people and results in more than 1,100 deaths in Colorado and is at number 9 on the list.
Right, yeah, and suicide, number 7, nearly 1,300 deaths last year in Colorado. That was about the same as we saw the year prior. Homicides, by comparison, much lower, of course, around 360. But they fell in 2023 compared to 2022. It was a drop by about 50 deaths. And that, I should say, is homicides and legal intervention, which includes instances of police shootings.
You talked about there being quite a few reports recently with some statistics that tell a lot about what's going on in Colorado. And to leave people on maybe a more positive note, some of the statistics you pulled out of the Colorado Healthy Kids Survey, which is really an amazing ongoing tool in Colorado to compare behaviors, lifestyles, attitudes, and public health statistics over time. You had a pretty eye-popping chart on what's been going on with one issue in particular. What did you decide to pull out of all of those Healthy Kids questions this year, John?
Sure. So this is the Healthy Kids Colorado Survey. It's kind of seen as the gold standard or the best we got in terms of assessing youth behavior, especially when it comes to behavioral health, mental health, physical health. Every other year, it samples about 120,000 students from more than 300 schools. So it's a big, big survey. It has some notable gaps, especially like in El Paso County, in terms of high opt-out rates for school districts or students. So, critics would say that it doesn't necessarily cover the entire state, and you might be missing some trends that occur in specific parts of the state. But in terms of the overall survey, it's one of the biggest ones we have. So it's probably the best resource we have. And there were a few notable things here. But in general, the trend seemed to be that some of the things we're concerned about when it comes to youth and mental health and behavior, that they're getting better. And one thing that the state definitely highlighted was improvements in mental health. Far fewer high school students reported persistent feelings of sadness or hopelessness. 26% said that they did, compared to 40% in the 2021 survey, which of course was right sort of in the midst of the height of the pandemic. Fewer teens reported contemplating or attempting suicide. More high school students said they felt like their stress levels were manageable most days. But another thing that was really interesting is that this was the 2023 Healthy Kids Colorado survey. So that now gives us 10 years of data since the 2013 Colorado Healthy Kids Colorado survey. And what makes that survey, the 2013 survey, interesting to look back on is that was the last survey before Colorado opened recreational legal marijuana stores. And so there's been a lot of questions about, well, what kind of impact was that going to have on kids' use of cannabis specifically? And what we've seen is actually there's been a decline. In 2013, 19.7% of Colorado high school students said that they had used marijuana at least once in the 30 days prior to taking the survey. In 2023, last year, that percentage had fallen to 12.8%. And we saw declines from 2013 in the percentage of students who reported ever using marijuana, declines actually in the percent of students who say that it would be easy for them to get marijuana if they wanted to. And we're also seeing more students, slightly more, this isn't a huge trend line, but more than 70% of Colorado high school students now say that they think it would be wrong for someone their age to use cannabis. So that's 10 percentage points higher than what we saw in 2013.
So huge implications for people's ongoing discussions about public policy and marijuana, which will always be controversial, and legalization will continue to be controversial in Colorado. But one of the big claims has always been, or big worries has been, that just more access, more shops would, and the whole public attitude that it's perfectly legal and fine, would end up making many more youths use it, a much higher percentage. That being one of the primary worries of the debate. And this is some fairly clear evidence that, at least on that particular issue, we're not trending in that direction.
Yeah, so I think it's really interesting to try to think about what's going on here. And certainly the cannabis industry and folks who are legalization advocates, they kind of jumped on this and said, hey, look, this shows that regulation is working, that we're keeping cannabis out of the hands of underage kids who should not be having access to it, and we're not causing any sort of alarming spike in youth usage. Now, I would note one thing is that the data is a little bit opaque. Using cannabis once in the prior 30 days is kind of, it's a measure that encompasses a lot of potential kinds of use that would encompass everybody from those who are using it every day versus those who are using it only once a month. And, what trends are happening within that group are also important. So we don't know what's actually happening there. The other thing is that there's been sort of a general trend in the last few years towards youth engaging in less risky behavior. And this is something that is true in Colorado. I think it follows actual national trends as well. So we are seeing fewer high school students in Colorado based on this 2023 data, fewer high school students reporting binge drinking. We're seeing fewer high school students reporting vaping. We're seeing fewer high schoolers saying that they have had sex or that they're sexually active. In fact, for the first time since at least 2013, the percentage of 18-year-olds in high school who report ever having had sex was below 50%. That number is usually above 50%. We're seeing it below 50%. So, you know, what may be going on here, it's really interesting to think about and something that will require a lot of further analysis.
What are these kids doing with all their time? I see a trend, a story trend coming. Are they all starting bands in their garages? I don't know. I think we need to send some people out to figure this out. What do you think, John?
Yeah, well, I think that's one of the questions. Is this sort of a generational trend towards healthier, less risky behavior for young people to engage in? Or is this maybe actually something a little bit sad? Does this indicate maybe greater social isolation? Does this indicate greater social isolation?
Right.
That would not allow these types of riskier behaviors to be taking place. So a lot to think about.
Kids are spending all this extra time on Instagram. That's not necessarily a great thing either. So maybe time to ask some more questions.
Yeah. So Mike, I wanted to ask you about something. You've been doing some reporting on construction of new solar projects, and there's an exciting one that looks like it's going to get underway on the Western Slope.
Yeah, Delta Montrose has some good news on the solar front this week. They are launching a $72 million, well, they're accepting a $72 million loan from the federal government to build a $90 million solar farm out in the Delta Montrose area that will serve the Delta Montrose Co-op, which is a public co-op. And they have broken away from the much bigger Tri-State Generation, which used to supply power to a huge number of co-ops in Colorado, but has been diminishing somewhat because those individual co-ops in your small town on the Western Slope or in your county in Southern Colorado have decided to go their own way. They didn't feel like Tri-State was creating renewable energy enough and quickly enough and was charging them too much money, and decided to go off on their own. They've broken their contracts. They bought themselves out of contracts and has spent a lot of money to do that. And so Delta Montrose is one of those that got away in 2020. And they have promised to replace whatever they're using that's with fossil fuels as quickly as possible with renewables. So this second solar farm is that they're developing. They're already developing one called Garnet Mesa that's even bigger than this. But this new project will be a $90 million project for about 20 megawatts, and it will be accompanied by 80 megawatt hours of battery storage, which is how more utilities are doing it these days, to make it more reliable on the days the sun's not shining or to put out power at night for the co-op. And the cool thing about the loan for them and for their ratepayers is that 40% of that loan is forgivable, meaning that it really just becomes a grant once they get the project built. And so it makes it a very cheap source of new power for them, and they can replace any gas-generated or coal-generated power that they might be buying from elsewhere and increase their sources of renewables. So people in Delta Montrose are excited about that development and excited about taking more control. They will own and operate this new solar farm, so they are really taking control of their own renewable energy and their own energy future on the Western Slope. It's good to see.
Yeah, really kind of a remarkable shift. A lot of these co-ops have historically not done the power generation side. They've just been power purchasers, and they've made sure their members get hooked up to it. But to see relatively small organizations in rural Colorado actually jumping in and creating power generation is pretty remarkable.
And it becomes a political thing too, and depending on which side you're on subsidies and this kind of progressive liberal policy in energy will color how you look at it. But they sent the agriculture secretary for the U.S., Tom Vilsack, out to announce this grant and a couple other grants in Colorado. And the Biden administration, which has invested heavily in renewable energy through the Inflation Reduction Act and other things that they've been able to do in moving money around. And every time they have a local grant like this that can go to a rural area and an area that has traditionally not had that much access to this kind of development funding, they highlight it as much as possible and certainly want to do that between now and November. Obviously, if you're of the political persuasion and the economic persuasion that the government shouldn't be subsidizing that, you won't look as kindly on this kind of plan for rural Colorado, but they are getting the word out. And so could be good things for the future of Delta Montrose, at least from the co-op's perspective.
All right. Well, Mike, thanks for the update on that. I'm sure you'll keep following it. And everyone, thanks for listening this week. Be sure to sign up for Tatiana's panel that happens next week, looking at how to improve Colorado's system for caring for those with severe mental illness. And be sure to listen to all the other great podcasts that we have here coming out every weekday with different reporter chats. Mike and I, as we said, are usually on Thursdays, and we'll be back here next week. So take care.
You can read more at coloradosun.com. Finally, here are a few stories that you should know about today. A dispute between Durango and the Southern Ute Indian Tribe has spurred a new state law. The law says municipalities that want to annex land within a reservation must get tribal approval first. Durango has contemplated plans to spur economic growth and access water supplies in areas that could involve annexing land within the reservation. The Southern Utes said that the city's annexation discussions were secretive and dishonest and took the matter to the state legislature. The city attorney said it was a communication breakdown, called the allegations fictional, and said tribal officials going to lawmakers was a political strategy. The shooter, who killed 5 people and injured 19 others at an LGBTQ nightclub in Colorado Springs, has pleaded guilty to 50 federal hate crimes. Anderson Lee Aldrich admitted to the hate crimes and was sentenced to 55 life terms, but once again declined to apologize or say anything to the victims' families. Aldrich is already serving life in prison after pleading to the state charges in the 2022 shooting. Federal prosecutors described how premeditated hate and bias fueled the attack at Club Q. The death penalty was taken off the table in the plea deal. Colorado workers trying to unionize at 2 major movie theaters are feeling some relief with the recent sale of Alamo Drafthouse to Sony Pictures. The news came just a few weeks after employees at the Sloan's Lake and Westminster locations held union elections. Sloan's Lake unequivocally voted for a union, while Westminster is awaiting a ruling from the National Labor Relations Board. Since Sony is used to dealing with other unions, Colorado organizers say it will create a more favorable environment than they've endured so far. For more information on all of these stories, visit our website, coloradosun.com. And don't forget to tune in again next time. Now, a quick message from our team.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening. My name is Jason Blevins. I'm the outdoors writer here at the Colorado Sun, co-founder of the Colorado Sun. I'm on the weekly podcast with David Krause every Monday. And I also write a weekly newsletter. Comes out every Thursday. It's called The Outsider. Take a look at each issue has sort of early glimpses of stories. I got stuff on housing, high country business, high country culture, public lands, public land managers, kind of just about anything kind of interesting and happening on the Western Slope. Try to get into it. Ski industry stuff. I invite you to come check it out. It's one of the many newsletters we have at the Colorado Sun. Head to coloradosun.com/join and become a member and support the Colorado Sun. Appreciate you guys listening. Thanks.